Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May, and I hope everyone's having a good day so far today on this Tuesday, September 29th. And excited to have back on the show Dr. Tommy Yawkey. Tommy, how you doing? Dr. Yawkey. Dr. Yawkey, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, great. Good to have you back on the show, Dr. Yawkey.
Good, thank you, Rob. Yeah, appreciate that.
All right. So, for everyone just joining this particular series today, this is part two of a four-part series that we're going to be doing with Dr. Yawkey. And now, interesting work that he does, and he's had a pretty tremendous career as a professor. And Dr. Yawkey, why don't you share with us a little bit about yourself, just to kind of familiarize everybody?
Yeah, I grew up in the city of Pittsburgh and love it dearly, and spent some neat time at Indiana University of Pennsylvania in Pennsylvania. How about that, huh?
Very nice. There you go.
I thought it should have been Indiana, right? But it's not. It's in Pennsylvania. Hooray. Also had the opportunity of being invited to the University of Illinois to study and get my GA. I got a graduate assistantship there and spent six years through the program. And yes, and getting some in-depth experience and trials in the area of cultural differences and cultural diversity, which I really love and enjoy. And also a lot of information about discussion of cultures within classroom settings and within people work settings. You see, also obliquely important.
Sure.
So many
Absolutely.
Times, for example, the grocers who run around our grocery stores here in, say, college, for example, Pennsylvania, they don't really appreciate working with, you know, internationals. But that's the love of our life, basically, for those of us
Absolutely.
In cultural studies. That's right. Huh? So anyway, that's part of the whole process of also buying a house.
And, of course, we all know that buying a house is such a huge step in somebody's life. I mean, it's a commitment. It's a financial commitment. It's everything. You know, you really have to be ready. So, you know, for new buyers out there or new house seekers or property seekers out there, what do you usually tell people when they come to you and say, look, this is the first time I'm buying a property. What am I doing? What do I look for?
Right. Yeah, what I do then, Rob, immediately is to let them know that there is some tremendous information on the Internet. And I recommend very strongly a company called, to go onto the Internet, Google, for example, www.realtor.com/author/RDCBLOGEDITOR. Blog editor, okay?
Okay.
And there you'll be able to get some really information, really neat information that's really realistic and some very good ideas on how to begin making an offer to a house that you want to buy, you see?
Sure. Sure. Now, when you say that, though, so what should people kind of think about? I mean, aside from obviously doing some research, which I know research in house purchasing is huge. I mean, you got to know what you want. But, I mean, you know, for you, what is it that you would say a new house buyer or seeker is really, you know, what should be like the main things that they look for in either finding a realtor or finding a house?
Okay, in terms of the realty side, what I would really seriously and strongly recommend is that people who often buy houses, for example, in Pennsylvania, will say, but why on earth do I have to have a inspection on my house I'm selling, or buying for that matter? But that's a natural kind of procedure. Don't worry, because these inspections will be helping you out to increase your property, okay, to banks and the mortgage companies. They want an inspection done, basically, you see?
Absolutely.
Because
now,
they're not
stupid. Why would people overlook that, though?
You. What's that?
But why would people try to overlook doing that? What's the positive of not having an inspector come in? I mean, that sounds silly.
Unfortunately, when they do that, they blow away their legs. They basically throw out a lot of money that they could have made if they did a $200 inspection of, let's say, termites, for example.
Right.
That's a favorite
sure.
one. And people will say, termites? Why do I want to inspect for termites? But if they do, then the bank will get the idea is that they need additional assistance and more money to sell the house. It's not a problem, you see, for them. It becomes a problem for the people who want to buy it when they think so small. You see what I mean? They're thinking of
right.
a house they need to sell, not termites. They're not selling termites. They're selling a house.
No, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, and
also,
I think that falls
yeah.
into. Oh, go ahead.
Another one is surveying to get boundaries. Too many of our houses don't have accurate measurements, believe it or not, of the surveys around the boundaries of the house. And so many times then you get caught in paying more money for taxes that you don't need to pay for. So that might be an incentive for some to have a survey, you know.
Sure.
Now, boundaries, I would repass that on to the person who are licensed in surveying rather than myself answering it. Because that
mm-hmm.
I'm out of that career. And I didn't want to overspill my upper level of
course.
Interest.
Of course. So now, I was going to say.
Another thing, Rob, another
yes.
thing is called structural inspections. I've spent so much time trying to convince my people buying property that you've got to have a structural incentive or structural inspection of a double-wide, for example, trailer. You can't
okay.
hopefully move into that thing and buy it without having it structurally inspected. You see what I mean?
Sure. I mean, that makes sense, though, right?
All the joists together. Are all the tie-downs around that double ride pulled down and anchored in cement like the
right.
requirements require them to be? You see what I mean?
Of
Does
course.
My footings work? I mean, all that kind of other stuff. It's just something else. The people simply don't think about that in depth until they get stuck. You see what I mean?
Right. Of
I had
course,
this one
yeah.
question who bought a double-wide trailer, and she forgot to understand that she also had to find whether or not on the MLS system there is a owner to that property, okay? Because
okay.
she never did that, and here the loaner was not an American. He was a Canadian. And Canada from Pennsylvania is so far away, it's like going to France. France is nice, too. I love France. But anyway... The idea is you're really making sure who owns that thing. And the problem
right.
was that the seller, the buyer, the owner, okay, did
uh-huh.
forgot basically that he had to, how do you call that, void the license tag on that double wide. You can't sell the darn thing in Pennsylvania with a double wide trailer license
right.
on it. Because that means there's two of the wheels to the trailer. You see what I mean, Rob? And it's
mm-hmm,
time to
mm-hmm.
take it away.
Sure.
Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. And now,
well, she found out a lot of information.
I'm sure. Now, to you, does it make sense for people? Because I know what we're talking about here are obviously things that people can overlook or things that people think they could save a little money on by just not doing. But obviously, in the long
That's
term,
right, exactly.
this is going to
yeah,
cost
uh-huh.
you more money. So what do you
it's
say
right.
though when it comes to finding a realtor? Now, if I'm to say, oh, you know what, I'll put the ad out myself and I'll do all the grunt work and I'll sell my house myself and I not have to pay a realtor. Does it pay in the end to try to do that, or honestly, is it simpler for somebody like yourself, a professional who knows what they're doing, to handle that type of thing
right.
for people?
Uh huh. Yeah, I'll get that back to that in a second, Ron. But second or
sure.
third, that's really an excellent question and comment, but Robert, we appreciate that. Because, yes, so many times when you go through these inspections, it's going to help the buyer because the buyer will get a much better mortgage, okay?
Right.
If
mm-hmm.
they find out that they need certain kinds of things done, for example, like screens put in the house before they sell it, because the
sure.
screens in the house belong to the buyer, seller's requirement. They must pay for that and not the
right.
buyer. You see, so many things
of
that,
course.
Oh, my God, I'm going to pay a lot of money. But it's worth the money in the end because the mortgage companies are not gold. They're not dumb at all. They'll say, okay,
mm-hmm.
wow, you've got another $20 or $200 more dollars in screens. That means, you know, the additional kind of reviewing of the mortgage requirements. That's beautiful.
Right.
And it's a plus, right. And besides, so many, well, this is going to be, seems like really nitpicking, but so many of the sellers don't want to identify the defects of that particular house that they're selling.
Of course.
But by legal laws in Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, you've got to disclose those defects. You see what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's fraud. And the buyer goes to jail, or the seller does, rather. Excuse me.
Sure, yeah.
The seller goes to jail. Now, yes, it's just a jail.
Now,
I
got to ask you this. I'm curious about this one, then. And I do want to get back to another question that I asked you, though. But do, for the states that you're licensed in, is the law very different between each state, or no?
Yes, there are. Yes, there are, For example, some states, I'm licensed in Pennsylvania, Maryland, and West Virginia. And so many of the states differ on, for example, on how many, if you have a deck, okay, on your house, okay, if you have a deck and just kind of picture a deck in your mind, and also then the boards going down, okay, on the top of the floor. So I call them slats, wooden slats, you know, across the top, okay? And oftentimes then so many of them don't require them to be like 4 or 5 inches apart, okay? And other times other states like Pennsylvania and Maryland as well require the same kind of 4 to 5 inches apart, if not more. You see what I mean? Because the little kids can get their head stuck in there and choke themselves to death.
Yeah.
And that's not good. That's not good. So that's, again, the important things. I know we sold a house in Oakland, Maryland, and had to redo part of our deck because our slats were only 2 inches apart and it could not be put on sale and in the market in Maryland. You see what I mean?
Right.
Because they didn't want kids to die. Notice I wanted kids to die. You see what I mean?
Right.
Because they'd be choking themselves, those little great little kids, which we all know they are, you know, that kind of thing. And so anyway, that's another one of the values. You're protecting your own family. That's critical.
Of course.
Man. Ooh, my goodness.
And so and again,
And if,
that's something that you would have.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I would, one thing I would really do a step further, okay, with the audience group listening. I would, if you're going to be dealing anything with structural foundations, I would ask that person who must be licensed in engineering, some form of engineering, or at least a copy occupation, an occupation close to social structures or engineering structures. You see what I mean? To be able to give their information. And this is so, so important, the structural foundation. I know a person in Pittsburgh who hired a construction company, and they dug out the back of the hill, and then built a beautiful house, actually. And then, but they came so close, Rob, to the kitchen, And then came the storms and the ice next last fall, and the waters were coming down, and that whole darn hill went right into the kitchen. And they found out later on that this guy and instructors were not licensed in structural kinds of things. But yet they told the people they were. That's a lie, man. You can't go doing that in terms of this kind of stuff. You see? And did they get sued? Yeah, they got sued. Yes, they did. Horribly, they got sued, right. Yeah, so, they should have done that. They should have been sued in the first place. That's not right. That's not right to take care of people like that. Anyway, so that's really one of the, kind of my big, stones that I kind of stop on constantly in keeping my eyes on what's going on with the people who work for them. You see what I mean?
Right.
And I'd ask them, simply ask the person, construction engineer and so forth, you said you were an engineer, show me your license. And look at that license carefully and see if there is, it's a raised portion. What do you call it, Rob? A raised portion? To see the stamp in there, you see?
Mm-hmm.
That they have been licensed, right. You see that? And so you're all set then. You feel good about that, basically.
Absolutely.
It's an interesting situation. It really is. So anyway, so how many inspections that would depend upon also the mortgage company? They may have you do maybe two or three. For example, if one house I saw in Terre Haute, West Virginia, where there was a large furnace above the grate room in the house.
Okay.
But the problem there was that the grate room was a neat idea, but the furnace above in the attic, was not a good idea because the structure of the wood was not made to hold half a ton of of a furnace. You see what I mean?
Right.
It was too heavy.
Yeah, sure.
And the buyers need to know those things too to begin asking questions like that. So anyway, I get re-tied up with it just because they need to know their rights as well.
Of course.
So anyway, yeah.
So now, getting back to the question that I presented earlier, as far as the value of, you know, hiring a realtor as opposed to people just trying to do it on their own. I mean, what other things should you really tell people? I mean, what do they need to know?
Oh, in terms of the realtor, or in terms of the...
In terms
yeah,
of
example,
finding a realtor and, you know, just some of the benefits, obviously,
right.
of having a realtor.
Right. Yeah, one of the good questions to ask the realtor, and some people, folks, well, don't want to do this because they feel it's insulting. It's not insulting to me to ask me how many years have I been teaching at Penn State and researching Penn State. But you need
mm-hmm.
to ask them that kind of stuff. And also then show them and ask them for, like, a license to document what
right.
they just said or other kinds of things like that. For example, if you ask your potentially new agent, you say, how many houses have you sold in this neighborhood that I want to move into? Now, if his answer says he's never sold properties or bought properties in that neighborhood, then the idea then is you may not want to have him or hire him as an agent, since he's unfamiliar
mm-hmm.
with the houses, you see, in that area. And you need a person who understands the houses and understands the people. Otherwise, you know, you may be buying a swamp. You won't know it, that kind of thing.
Of course. Right,
but,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And for everybody just joining us now, you're listening to CMC Radio, and I'm your host, Rob May, and with me is Dr. Tommy Yawkey. And we're discussing real estate and obviously, you know, the different things to kind of look out for. There's a lot to take on when you're trying to buy a house, obviously, when you're trying to sell a house. It's an interesting thing that has to really go into play here. And getting back to
right.
it, Dr. Yawkey, why is it important to have trust between buyers, sellers, and the real estate agent?
Okay, now that's an ideal, critical element, which the National Association of Realtors keeps pounding at. Ethics, ethics, ethics. We've
sure.
got to build within the client, okay, a need to say, well, gee, ask questions, ask real questions, and hard questions, okay? That's good. That's all part of the process. And another thing that we need to do is to make sure that everything is flying in formation, that it's legally perfect. You see what I mean? And,
right.
And that's really, really critical because then this client gets the ones who gets zapped, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for example, a lot of my clients will say, well, you know, that realtor really gave me a price on my house that really was high. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and highest price I've ever received in the past year. And I says, now, is that a wise thing or is that not a wise thing? She goes, oh, it's wise because I always want to make more money. You know,
mm-hmm.
I said, well, yeah, that's a possibility, but at the same time, you may lose more because the person who's giving that very high, okay, price, okay, to your home, okay,
mm-hmm.
may not have done comparables. What we mean is taking it to house, 50 years old, and then begin looking at that cost, you know, the price of it, and then go amongst
sure.
the neighborhood and compare other prices of those homes that are equally 50 years of old, you see, and have been
right.
on the market for five months, and mine's been on the market for 5 months, you see what I mean, and they're both the same, but that price was higher than mine, you see what I mean, and that
mm-hmm.
is some kind of problem right there, right away. The higher prices don't really necessarily mean you'll be making more. You may be making less.
Of course.
Out. That kind
sure.
of stuff. So, yeah, and if it's a note here from another, I have that guy, Dr. Lee. He writes real estate books. And he says,
okay.
if you're too high for the market, buyers will not even look at it because they know you're not realistic. You see? And that's a beautiful statement, you know. And then also, secondly, the longer your property, and this is true for sure, the longer your property sits on the market, the more people are going to think they're getting something wrong with it. There's something wrong with it. And it's a
right.
tremendous comment there, right. So
how do you combat that then? I mean, what do you say to people if they finally come to you and say, hey, our house has been on the market for, you know, this long, were worried about that. How would you approach that, and how would you help them get out of that and say, you know what, this is what we can do to help you sell that thing?
Right. I would go to the MLS system and then pull off pictures and analyses of houses that were, let's say, for example, built in 1990.
Okay.
That's not so bad. That's not very close. And it's somewhat, but close yet, not too close. But yeah,
sure.
So I took a look at, take a whole pile of 1990 homes and show them. Yes, mine. How many bedrooms yours? Mine, I had 5 bedrooms. Well, here's one for 5 as well. How many bathrooms? Well, mine, we had 1.5. Now here's one with 2. And we begin comparing all that stuff. You see, Rob? And they're going to find out later on that, whoa, there are differences between them. Yes, there are.
Right.
Tremendous differences. Especially when you compare them like that, you know? And also the amount of acreage. How much acreage is it, you know? And oftentimes the acreage is often off. Remember, it's not real. I mean, it's not done well. I find that so many times when I go on to the assessors, you know, for example, like in Preston County, West Virginia, they're different, okay, basically. And then whether it be done in Pennsylvania or West Virginia or Maryland, there may be differences, so you need to iron those out, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And get real estate, you know, oriented, you know, good, you know, surveying. So, yeah, it's really an interesting kind of a situation. I think the statements by Dr. Lee were very high. Do you think that if you're too high for the market, the buyers will not even look at the house. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most interesting thing. And also, one of my friends who owns a house, a nice house actually. She comes from Mineral County. Not Mineral County. Oh no, it's one of the counties in Maryland, northern
okay.
part of the Howard, Maryland, yeah. And she has had a house, and she really loved to leave it go in a sense with lots of care to it, but yet at the same time have another house, you know, back in northern Maryland. Okay, so she had to run back and forth, and that really hampered so many times the buyer's interested, and also then the seller's interested, of course, you know.
Sure.
And also, but she got a good agency and helped her work through that thing. That was great. So that was my kind of suggestion to her. She did. She did a good job. So anyway, let me see.
I was curious to ask too, Dr. Yawkey. Now,
yeah.
In terms of marketing a property or marketing yourself in real estate, how do you do this? How have you approached your marketing habits?
Okay, good point. So many of my my buyers are first time buyers, home buyers, and
okay.
what I do then with them is to go through the houses that they really prefer, like what's your dream house, that kind of stuff. I always begin with them first because they're the clients, you see,
right?
And they're the ones who are paying, you know, basically, not the bank, not
right.
the mortgage companies, but them. And we go down then and then go through these forms that Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia has. They're very similar kinds of things because all the states' committees on real estate have agreed on these things. So they're, you know, it's no-brainer in terms of that stuff.
Right.
What we do is go, I have them go religiously go down then and take a look at the property they want to buy and then basically fill out the form called, like in Pennsylvania, making an offer, okay, to purchase the house. And we go through each one of those pages and fill them out, okay? And the person walked after you said, wow, I learned so much during this. Boy, I had to ask them all about these questions. I said, sure. That's part of the, you know, they started to realize that they are the buyer and not the seller. You see what I mean?
Right.
They've got to have those particular characteristics embedded in their mind. And also then selling agent, okay, does also, which is different than the buying agent. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So kind of lead them on, you know, give them success at each line at a time. And it just opens up to their eyes. Wow, I can do it. Yes, you can, sir. You can do it.
Sure.
You see?
Absolutely,
it's a whole different
definitely.
Life when they say, wow, I can do it. Exactly. Huh? Much like my graduate students will come from, for example, like Kuwait and places like that. And they say, ooh, I can't even do an English paragraph. And then I go down and say, okay, we're going to outline this, okay? And I give them an outline. Like 4 or 5 lines, okay, to this particular paragraph, and say, okay, now I've given you books in there to look at. So go to the library and find each one of those books and bring it in to me, and then we can talk about it. And then they write their own paragraphs, and it ends up in their thesis. It's beautiful. but they're successful. You see what I mean? You kind of make them successful themselves, and they're the successes from themselves. Yeah.
Definitely.
And it works out.
So it seems that you build a nice rapport with your client.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Right. And then they can they bitch? Well, certainly. I appreciate that. The more feedback I get from my clients and agents I deal with, the better. You know, for example, so I know where they're going, that kind of thing, and help them out, get successful, and become winners. Yeah. So it works.
Absolutely.
It does.
That's why. And so, what are some of the? Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just thinking about the number of people I've had now at Penn State from all over creation, Russia and Spain. Wow. Spain. No. China. Okay, and also South Korea and so forth. Taiwan. Oh, my God. Australia, actually. Yeah, that kind of stuff. The koala bear lovers. That's great.
And you really seem to get a kick out of that, out of helping people from everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. India also, the Punjab. Oh, my heavens, yeah. Really wants to head on to California. I guess they're very good jobs in computer ease, you know, and with Google, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But they're also very, very dandy, yeah. I laugh. another concern I was thinking about. We kind of broke up both. The client goes from India, okay, from the Punjab, and she's trying to get her job here in Pennsylvania. She did a good job, actually, right. And she says, you know, my whole family moved around quite. I said, yes, and biblically, you're in the second legend, the second group migrating from India all the way over to Thailand. She said, how do you know that? And it was, that's part of cultural study. You know, to watch the migration go over to Thailand and also up to China. It's beautiful. But she actually said, I never knew that.
Now, we're winding down here in the last couple minutes of the show, Dr. Yawkey, so I want to make sure that people can get a hold of you. So why don't you tell people the best ways to reach out to you in case they have questions or concerns or they want to find out some more about you.
Beautiful. Yeah, have them go on the Google and Google up, how would you do that? You put my name in there, Thomas, okay? T-H-O-M-A-S.
Okay.
The last name is Yawkey, Y-A-W-K-E-Y. And then a comma, Professor Emeritus, Penn State University, and then ask away, right? You get a whole bunch of stuff, of books produced and so forth. I've finished 18 books already, so you'll find
of
those on the internet. Yeah.
Nice. All right. That's great. So let me ask you this then real quick while we have about 2 minutes left for this particular show, and I want to just remind everybody that we do have Dr. Yawkey coming back on in 2 weeks from today, and then we have another show with him 2 weeks following that. So we got two more shows with Dr. Yawkey. Thank God, because it was very exciting to have you on the radio with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rob.
So what do you have? And it's great to have you. So what do you hope people take away from your classes or from working with you in real estate?
Yeah, one of the tremendous requirements of the real estate person or any adult, working with people of different ages, that kind of a thing, you've got to really be a people person. Mm-hmm. Be enjoying with folks and what you interact and how you interact with them. And also have fun, you know. A lot of fun we've had in these classes I've had. And it's really, because it's, there's a question and answer kind of a stuff, you know. You can say, ha-ha, you're successful. See, I told you would, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So it's really beautiful. You're getting to know each other very well, and that's how they begin to develop in trust, you know, that kind of stuff. But you're not to screw them, right, basically. You see what I mean? You're out there to help them, that kind of a thing. And that's what my role was. See, I always see, you always got to see your role differently than the normal, for example, agent who wants to sell a million properties a week, that kind of stuff. And that's a pusher agent, which is okay. That's fine. You know, that's moral power to them. But at the same time, the guy buying a property has got to also release that each of the agents have different kinds of personalities. We're all human. You see, that kind
of
thing.
Of course.
So, and then say back and say, is that my person or not my person? Okay, which is beautiful. Is that my house or not my house?
That's right. Well,
anyway,
Dr. Yawkey, unfortunately,
thing,
we have run out of time for this episode, but I do want to thank you for coming on today, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks, all right?
Very good, yeah. Very good, Rob. We
all right.
And I thank you all. A lot of people sitting here listening to us, and well, welcome back again. Thanks,
That's
Rob.
That's right. All right. Well, take care. And from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.
Okay. God bless, Rob. Right. Take care, Rob.